2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to the superstar Jenny Green, back with her too tomorrow at 3 o'clock. You don't want to miss it. There's a chance to win €1,000. It's Thursday, the 28th of January, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Mayo's Keith Higgins on his retirement from the Western Force.
It didn't look like that for part of the qualifiers. They're looking like it now. Keith Higgins, still Higgins. It's another goal here. Oh, that is magical. It's the first time he's ever scored a goal in Championship football. They're on their feet to applaud that.
We'll have Conan O'Byrne on the Premier League as Liverpool look to get back on track. Plus, the boys in green have a new goalkeeping coach.
Up goes Fossil! Kept out by Kiley's brilliance. It's another one to add to the catalogue of super saves we've seen from both goalkeepers. Oh, that's the best of the bunch. That's wonderful stuff from Dean Kiley.
We've Donegal athlete Katrina Jennings on ultra running records, and we've our eye on America as Tom Brady eyes up another Super Bowl.
Brady goes for the deep shot. He's got a touchdown! Scotty Miller! Oh my God!
Jam show now between now and 7 o'clock with Carl Mullen. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Marie, how are we doing? A lot going on in sport. We are a busy, busy show between retirements, fixtures, loads of AFW or AFLW going on. So a lot to get our teeth into.
Yeah, it's a busy day. It's one of those weeks where we didn't think we would have anything and then loads happened. So yeah. One of my favourite types of weeks.
Yeah, I have to put my hand up. My heart sank a little bit today. I knew it was coming. We haven't been able to play domestic rugby in Ireland over the last past while. And today it was announced that the men's and women's Energia All-Ireland League has been cancelled due to the impact of the coronavirus. It had been in limbo since March, but the RFU, to be fair, put a full stop in it now. And I do commend them for doing it. There's nothing worse than uncertainty. And at this point, I don't think we could have done a whole lot more with how far it's gone on in terms of the season. But I'm worried, Marie. I'm just really worried for the grassroots of the game. 100% we see the beautiful side of it, the top end professional stuff. But rugby's all about nurturing young talent and bringing them on. And it is a worry for me that last week only 46 players in the whole country played rugby, and that's a fright.
So break it down for us, Donegal. Like, what potentially could be the impact of this when you just take into account things like players not kind of even bridging the gap from underage to the senior level, the kids not being out there, the women not playing.
Yeah, it's across all those fronts. Look, if I could be a little bit selfish, I'm not too worried about the elite end. Like, they get looked after in terms of if you're in an academy or if you're a promising under 21, you're going to find your way. But it's the club players I actually feel sorry for. The people that actually on a Tuesday and Thursday night love going training, love being around a group of lads, play to their level and just have fun. And look, that's really important. And it was really important for me to learn from some of those guys. You know, I just, going back to when I played with Conn, it was a massive step in my development to play against, you know, wirely props. You know, I remember Ken Murphy putting his hand around me and actually teaching me binds that, to be fair, Mick Galway, John Langford, they wouldn't have the time to go through stuff like that with you. You know what I mean? They're too busy in trying to be elite, that these are things you should know. But having someone that actually takes a bit of time to help you on your way. But like I said, it's the lads that probably play on a Tuesday and Thursday night and enjoy socialising. And I think you mentioned another valid point as well, that the Vodafone Women's Interpro Series has also been scratched, which to me, that's a bad one to lose, because we do, all the time we're pushing for our girls to get more time and be treated the same. And I think that's only going to happen if we follow the same structure as our own game. And if we have, you know, if we're pushing towards girls picking up contracts, it needs to be in a provincial sense. And I think the loss of that there is very disappointed. Look, it was always going to happen, but hopefully they can get out in September. I must say, fair play to the RFU, though. I think it is a good point to draw a line in it now and just say it's gone and not, you know, put out the kind of the hope of, can we keep it going?
Is there no way at all they can play it like in the middle of the year?
I think, Marie, they probably thought of everything, and they probably thought of just putting the players on edge. What, you're right as well. My concern is that we lose an awful lot of people, and I think that's going to happen in an awful lot of sports. So people just go, do you know what?
Also, Donica, the connection with the clubs, because for a lot of people, that habit of going down to the club, going out to see them play, they had different roles in the clubs. They, you know, it was a big part of their lives. And when you take that away, people are changing their habits now as well. And it's really hard to go back to what you did before when you spent a year and looks like 2 years now doing something completely different. And that's away from the clubs.
Absolutely. And Marie, it seems such a small building block in the professional game. If you look at the big picture, it's all about Ireland. But just if you take, for example, Craig Casey now has been called into the Irish squad, which leaves Munster light on nines. But if there was loads of nines playing in the AIL and getting match time, or even, I know this, but Duncan Williams played last year for Conn. There's a guy that could just jump back in. He knows the whole squad. He's playing regular rugby, and you could just put him back in the game. So, like I said to you, it is a worry when you see that, you know, we're trying to keep our whole system going on last week, 46 players playing the game. You know, at some point, when you look at the likes of France and England, they're vast more playing numbers. And look, again, I've got, and we'll all hone in on the elite end, but it's the lads that love playing rugby and enjoy it.
Look, we're talking quite a lot about GAA retirements, and today it was announced that Tom Condon, the Limerick hurler, has retired, and also Gary Brennan, the Clare footballer, and they're obviously playing in a championship that we're all really familiar with, and we're talking about week in, week out, and their retirements are really noteworthy. But I'm sure as well, Donica, there'll be players in the AIL who are going to finish because of this. Now, we probably won't hear about them, there might not be announcements, but their careers are going to end as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Marie, the great thing about, you've nailed it, it's the club structure. So it's crazy. Like Conn, where I play, I go up on a Saturday morning for training with Jake has started to play up there, and then all of a sudden I meet Anthony Horgan, I meet Mick O'Driscoll. It's where we hang around and where we
you're making the tea and sandwiches.
But that's it, you meet the likes of Don Lennon, you have the conversations, and you just feel like you're home, and then it's your part to kind of give a little bit back. But you're right, there is players within it that would kind of go, yeah, maybe it's time to hang them up, and that would be a shame. But like all good clubs, hopefully they can stay in it. Look, it is a dent, it is disappointing news, but I think it was inevitable that it's going to happen. It's just one thing I would hope, and we do. I do commend the RFU for calling, you know what I mean, calling it at this point, but I do think we have to look at our club structure. They looked at it maybe 2 years ago, but something needs to be done to make sure that we, you know, really look after our clubs as best as we can, because Marie, for me, it's a fundamental block in Irish rugby.
Right, well, that's something that we could explore next week, because, you know, we're not jam-packed with fixtures, and these are really important issues and topics, so we will definitely look at that more in depth next week. Right, let's take a very quick break, because as you said, Donica, we have a huge amount to get through, and after these we're going to be chatting to Katrina Jennings.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Green Fern's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural, high in protein, and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM. Welcome back. Now, over the weekend, Olympian Katrina Jennings was part of an attempt to break the women's world record time for 100 kilometres in Arizona. Now, it didn't go to plan, but there were a lot of factors involved in that, and she joins us now on the line to tell us all about it. Katrina, thanks a million for taking our call. In Santa Fe now, in New Mexico, is where you are.
That's right. Hi, Marie. I'm sitting at a very high altitude here, 7,200 metres in Santa Fe. I think it's the highest capital city in the US. So I'm glad the race wasn't here last weekend.
So tell us about the race, because obviously there's a lot to your story right now, Katrina, and I want you to be the one to tell us about it.
Sure. So back in October, Hoka Oni Oni reached out to me to let me know they were putting together an elite team of international runners with the target of breaking some records, world records, national records. And it was part of a marketing campaign to launch their new shoe, the Carbon X2. I guess it's a kind of a shoe that most people would know would rival the new Nike technology that gets a lot of media attention at the moment. So I accepted. I was very, very happy to receive such an offer in a year where there was absolutely no racing happening for me. But then in December, I learned that I was pregnant. So it was, I was delighted to learn, but obviously, you know, it was a big decision then as to whether or not I'd be able to compete. So having done quite a lot of research myself and spoken to my doctor a couple of times, you know, we agreed that the risk wasn't, you know, there wasn't a big risk for me to compete, provided I take certain precautions. The two main ones would be, you know, minding my body temperature throughout and also ensuring that I would have sufficient hydration on the course. And, you know, the way the Hoka team had laid out the course, it was on a racetrack, and there was 10 laps or 9 laps of just over 6 miles a lap. So, you know, I knew that I would have ample water stops and I'd have opportunities to pick up my own drinks along the way. So I discussed it with Hoka as well, you know, before traveling, and they were keen to have me involved and have me on board. So I made the decision to travel and to compete.
Okay, and how did it go for you?
Well,
like, how were you feeling throughout? Like, when you're going into a race like that, and obviously being pregnant, is that what's on your mind all the time, or are you thinking about the records?
Yeah, it was a really difficult one, Marie, because, you know, I mean, usually I approach a race with a very positive mindset and, you know, I'm there to compete and to win, or, you know, try to win, or you certainly be involved in the mix. And this time in particular, you know, I was kind of hoping that maybe I'd have a crack at the record. But, you know, then when I learned I was pregnant, everything changed a bit. And I guess, you know, my priority was going to be minding my baby. And although I had received the all clear from, you know, the doctors, it was still a difficult one. And I guess, like, logically, people, like, you know, my close family and friends that I had told I was pregnant were really kind of anxious and were trying to change my mind. So dealing with all of that, you know, during a race, it is actually quite difficult psychologically, because clearly you want to be in as positive a mindset as you can going into a run. But, you know, I was still kind of hopeful that everything would go well, but I had promised myself that, you know, I'd spoken to my husband and we'd agreed that if there was anything at all that I felt unusual, that I would pull out. And I also readjusted my entire race strategy so that I would be running much slower, at a pace that I knew I could maintain. I mean, I was running at a pace that I could run in training, you know, endlessly. So I was confident that what I had set out to do should be okay. But look, it was an unknown, because obviously with a 100-kilometer race, you're never going to run 100 kilometers in training in one full go. So it was always an unknown.
Katrina, you get the best advice there, but you do the right thing, because you know your body better than anyone. How hard you can push it, or how you're feeling.
Well, that's it exactly. And I guess, you know, I've been running all my life. I'm really aware of what my heart rate is. I wear a heart rate monitor all the time in training and racing, but, you know, I don't even really have to look at it at this stage to know where it's at, because, you know, you get such a good sense of how far you're pushing yourself. And I guess it was a decision that I took, knowing that, look, at the end of the day, I could always step off if I really needed to. But at the same time, you know, as I said, the competitor in me was still hoping that I would do much better than I did. And I was really sad when I had to. I was actually so emotional stepping off the course at 60K, because everything was going so well. I was feeling great. I was running well within myself. My heart rate was extremely low. You know, it was way lower than it would be even in training. And, you know, I had a nice little group that I was running with. Everything was great. And then around 55K, I started feeling kind of stomach cramps, which I wouldn't usually get. And immediately alarm bells just went off. And I just thought, no, you know, I had promised myself it's not worth it. And I don't want to have to live with this regret forever. So, you know, I took the tough decision at the time to step off and call it a day, unfortunately.
60 kilometres is still pretty phenomenal. There'll be people sitting at home listening to this now who have been or who are mothers and have been at the 12-week stage and thinking, oh my, how did she do that? So I have to say, fair play to you, Katrina.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a fair point, yeah. But, I suppose I can take a lot of positives from it as well. And I know that I got to the 60K and I was really comfortable. And I suppose it opens up some really exciting opportunities for me post-pregnancy. I'd be getting all those super mum hormones that I believe all the runners are benefiting from post-pregnancy. And also I have a very exciting sponsorship, two-year sponsorship deal with Hoka Oni Oni. Who, to their credit, actually signed me up for the two-year deal knowing I was pregnant. So, you know, I think that's a really positive sign of them, and it's going to be a very exciting relationship over the next 2 years.
And as well as that, Katrina, we're seeing more and more often now women having babies and coming back to elite sport. It's not taboo anymore. It is a normal thing. We're seeing it in loads of different sports. We're seeing it in Gaelic games. We're seeing it in professional football. We're seeing it in athletics. And it's absolutely brilliant, because it just shows that just because you go off and do something for a little while doesn't mean that you can't come back and be just as good and better at what you were doing before because you've had a baby.
Absolutely, Marie. And I think particularly now, I mean, first of all, the research would really suggest that I think, you know, a few years ago, people were really concerned about doing any sort of physical activity when you're pregnant in case it would harm the baby. But I think the research has just come on leaps and bounds, and there's plenty of research to say that that's not the case. And in fact, it's actually really beneficial to maintain a really healthy exercise regime during pregnancy. But also, you know, I think you know, there's such a push at the moment to get young girls into sport and to stay in sport. And, you know, it is something that, you know, with the various different efforts that have happened over the last couple of years in Ireland, I think, you know, it's essential that once you get to the point where you have those girls in sport and staying in the sport, they shouldn't really be put off having a family just because they want to be competitive. Like, you know, there's no reason why you can't have both. Or I may be eating my words when the baby arrives, but
but there, you know, is progress been made for sure, Katrina, and even just from maternity, we're seeing in professional sport, we all are very familiar with the Nike saga a few years back with maternity benefits in contracts, and we're seeing it now across the board. We're seeing it in cricket, it's going to come in to football. You know, I've seen a manager recently taking the time off, stepping away from managing her football team to go and have her baby and come back and having the confidence to do that as well. So there's progress been made all the time. And like, even you doing what you did, Katrina, it's progress. You know what I mean? It's something new. It's something different. You're paving the way for people if they do want to follow in your footsteps.
Absolutely. And, you know, I suppose no one really wants to take the risk of, you know, going all out, because no one ever wants to in any way jeopardize the health and the, you know, the of their unborn baby. So there, it is going to be probably slow progress. But, you know, I'm delighted to see even myself how, you know, I think that I don't believe that, you know, I've done any harm or damage to myself or my baby. And I think it's something that I'll definitely take positives from this, and hopefully, you know, I'll have more children in the future, and I'll definitely be learning from this experience myself.
No doubt you'll be doing it again as well, I'd say, from listening to now in the last while, Katrina. You seem to really enjoy the experience as well, which
baby
is brilliant.
Number two, trying to get to 70K.
And Katrina, just in terms of life now for you right now, so like obviously we hear the accent, we know you're Donegal and an Irish Olympian. You're in Hong Kong. Well, you're living in Hong Kong. You will be there again soon. So what's life like for you right now?
Life in Hong Kong is great. It's a great city. It's myself and my husband moved there last July for, I suppose, an adventure and something different. And we both work in aircraft leasing. I work with CTB Aviation, who's headquartered in Dublin, but they have an office in Hong Kong. So I was able to, you know, base myself there and work in the office there. So it's been really exciting. There's a really good running community there. A lot of trail running, which I'm not terribly good at myself, but it's nice that there's, you know, there are fellow runners there that you can meet up with and train with from time to time. The COVID situation there is it's probably, you know, it's pretty under control, but the government are taking a really strict approach to, you know, what they're permitting. And one of those is the travel restrictions. So you probably read in the news recently, actually it was just last week, that they banned anyone that had been in Ireland for more than 2 hours in the last 21 days. So we just learned that when we were actually in the US. So we've had to extend our trip here by 2 weeks, hence the Santa Fe location right now. And when we return to Hong Kong in 2 weeks' time, we will have a 3-week mandatory hotel quarantine. So, I mean, you know, I suppose you can see the benefits of it because it has really curbed the spread of the virus. And, you know, when you're walking on the street there, you're pretty confident that you're not going to get it. But I suppose when you're going through it, it's a bit more difficult and challenging.
For someone that's used to running 100K, like, how are you going to manage hotel quarantine?
How many
quarantine?
Can you do in the hotel? How many kilometres do you think you could knock off now in the hotel room? Yeah.
Well, I've actually just secured this morning a treadmill for the hotel room, so I'll have a treadmill. I also have my turbo trainer for my bike, which is coming. So I think hopefully I'll emerge even fitter than before.
It is an amazing sport, though. You have to be a genetic freak, really, don't you? But you also have to embrace pain.
Yeah, well, I guess I was always told I had a diesel engine. And while I always loved running, I was never great at the faster stuff, which was why I suppose my forte for quite a while was marathon running. And I guess I had a pretty negative experience in the London Olympics. I was injured and it didn't go to plan at all. But one of the positives that came out of that was my realization that I have a fairly strong mindset and tolerance of pain when I'm exercising. It probably sounds a bit statistic, but I do enjoy it. So it was one of the reasons that I decided to dip my toe in ultra running. I started with a 50K and I really enjoyed the experience. I did promise myself I'd never go as far as 100K, but when I ran Comrades Ultra Marathon in South Africa in 2019, it's probably one of the most famous ultra runs. And that just went really well for me and I really enjoyed it. So I decided, well, you know, if this is going well and I'm enjoying it, why not continue?
Yeah, absolutely. Katrina, thanks so much for joining us. The best of luck with your training, but more importantly with your family. We wish you all the best out there. And thanks for taking the time with us. A quick break and we're back chatting Gaelic football.
Chicken bites, 100% natural and packed with protein. Game on 2F.
Diagonal ball is in for James O'Donoghue. Keith Higgins. They're really going to know each other quite well. Oh, Higgins did well. Great anticipation. Good reading of the game.
Looked like that for part of the qualifiers. They're looking like it now. Keith Higgins, still Higgins. It's another goal here. Oh, that is magical. It's the first time he's ever scored a goal in championship football. They're on their feet to applaud that.
Hui Keane. That's the Son Honor kicking this air. Shockwin Higgins. Dimas Shaharvadi. Higgins. Oh! Watch it's an angle. Okay. Keith Higgins. Even a carrier from Gach. Now back Son. Orcher. Oh, Higgins.
Now, our next guest needs very little introduction. It's been an unbelievable journey and an absolute privilege. Thank you. The words of Keith Higgins after he stepped away from a very memorable career with Mayo. Keith joins us now. Keith, how are things?
Good. all good down this side. Thanks for having me on.
So a few days have passed now since you, made your decision, but since your announcement anyway. The dust has probably settled a little bit, but how are you feeling?
Feeling fine, feeling good. I suppose, to be honest, I had kind of made the decision about 2 weeks ago and spoken to James about it, but I was only kind of released the news of it there at the weekend. But no, I kind of have my mind made up for a few weeks, like I said. So yeah, well, happy with the decision now at this stage. So look, that's the way it goes. Time moves on and we just have to get over these things, I suppose.
How did you come about to make that decision? Because we've seen so many people making the decision recently. We've been talking quite a lot about just the amount of retirements and people that we think probably could continue for another while anyway, if we have some GA anytime soon. But just how did you come to making up your mind?
Sometimes you hear people who kind of would have their mind made up maybe a few months in advance or at the start of the season. I hadn't, to be honest. It was more of a case of looking back on the season, looking back on how the body was, and then trying to see if I could get back to the level I wanted to get to. And I just didn't think it was going to be possible. And I just didn't want to go through the year kind of, you know, fighting a losing battle and getting frustrated with things. So just kind of a lot of stuff like that went through my head. Obviously thought about, you know, trying to go back and trying to get back to that level and working hard. And it just... yeah, it just didn't seem like it was going to be possible. And like I said, I just didn't want to have to go through the year, you know, regretting the decision not to step away. So, yeah, that's how it came about. Just, I suppose, you know, thinking that, you know, I wasn't going to get to the level that I'd be able to kind of perform the level I wanted to. And that was kind of the main factor for me, really.
An incredible career. Have you had time to nearly reflect on it yet, or are you just still in the bubble of kind of just letting it go? Or, you know, have you looked back and thought there weren't bad innings?
Not really. I suppose, obviously, with there's a lot of texts coming through the last few days and that type of thing, and, you know, there's some days you'd be kind of reliving when you're talking to different guys. But yeah, so they haven't let it sink in a huge amount just yet. I returned to work there on Monday as well after a career break of 12 months. So between that and everything, it's it hasn't really settled in just yet. But like I said, there's always plenty of time for that and plenty of time for reminiscing on the good days.
You got some lovely tributes, just really nice things said about you. Were you aware how highly you were thought of before your announcement?
I've been looking at some of the texts and messages have been coming through. But I don't know, not really. I suppose, again, it's not something you kind of think about or you talk about with people, but like I said, sometimes when you see texts coming through off players you would have played against and that type of thing, it just, I suppose, that kind of really kind of gives you the appreciation for, I suppose, some of the battles we had with lads down through the years and that type of thing. So yeah, it's nice, but no, it's not something I would have ever kind of sat down and thought about or any of that. Like,
because the posts on social media, they're kind of nearly forward facing, but you're right, the messages you get from not only your teammates but rivals in the game can nearly really throw you, can't they?
Exactly, yeah. Like, I just got a text today from one of the Dublin guys in fairs to him, and you know, I suppose they're not the type of text you'd expect to get at 2 or 3 in the afternoon, but yes, it's just stuff like that that guys we would have had, like I said, plenty of battles with, kind of running battles on the pitch. And you know, in fairness, I suppose it does kind of kick home the whole thing of, as much as you want to try and beat these guys, you're playing against them, there is that mutual respect there, that they're going through the same thing year in, year out. So yeah, I think they're the types of texts that you do get that kind of, like, that they really hit home, you know, maybe how highly you are held, or if you're lucky enough to be held highly with other guys regarding it.
Or how often you might have frustrated players on the pitch as well. I'd say there was quite a bit of that as well, Keith. When you do take the time to reflect on your career, how do you think you'll look back on it?
I think you have to be kind of very appreciative of it, I suppose, particularly for myself. I had 16 seasons with Mayo, and, you know, if you'd have asked me back in 2005 when I made my debut against Dublin, would I be there for 16 years? I said I'd probably be doing well to be there for 6 months, in mind 16 years, you know. So I think it's kind of, you look back on it with, you know, a lot of pride and fairness, but I just think I've been extremely lucky that, you know, I've hadn't any really bad injuries. I was able to get through most of the years kind of injury free and kind of play most of the games. You know, you see other guys who had to retire because of injury and that type of thing, and like I said, I was just lucky that to get so long, get a good run at it. And I think particularly probably the last maybe 7-8 years when James came in again in his first stint, you know, he made us really competitive with some good days out. So yeah, just extremely lucky and just extremely grateful to have had such a good innings, I suppose.
It's great that you can go with your body intact, but also on your own terms.
Exactly, yeah. Like, even kind of talking to a few of the guys there, like even, you know, Tony Vaughan there, who retired just at the start of the year, like, he had an awful 12 months or 6 months with injuries. You know, and to see kind of what he put his body through to try and get back and kind of broke down again towards the end of the year. So I say, when you see stuff like that happening, and Jason Dock doing his second cruciate, obviously he'll be back stronger next year. But like, when I kind of see guys like that, I just realise how lucky I have been that, you know, the worst I had is maybe a hamstring injury or something like that along the way that might keep you out for 4 or 6 weeks. So yeah, just extremely lucky throughout all the years, really.
And Keith, I think, like, just listening to the commentary of you there and just remembering big days in Croke Park and the excitement and just everything that ye have given, that Mayo have given, just sports fans in general, just so many great days. But it's one thing sitting in and watching it, or been there and watching it. It must be a whole other thing to play in a game like that and to not come away with the win. Like, just how difficult were those days?
Yeah, they were tough. No points in otherwise. I mean, obviously you played the clip there of the Kerry game down Limerick in 2014, and that's probably one of the most high-profile ones. But yeah, this was, stuff like that is very difficult to take, because I suppose there's so much expectation. You know, you're putting so much expectation on yourselves as well to be successful, and then you lose a big game like that, you know, it can leave you very down for a couple of weeks. I suppose you're lucky in one sense that you can go straight back in with the club, but you know, it does take a while to get over. But look, like I said, that's the joy of the sport. We've had some very good days out as well, so you just kind of have to get on with it, I suppose. You know, it's not life or death really, but like I said, yeah, they are tough to take, but there's nearly always another game around the corner, so that's just that way. Look, it'll keep coming back, and I think in fairness, that Mayo team, they kind of optimise that. They keep coming back every year and give it another go.
There's one thing, coming back for another year, but 16 seasons is quite a long time. You must have some resilience.
Yeah, but like you said, people, sure, look, what else are you going to be doing? Do you know, I mean, obviously your career and your family outside of that, but you know, when you're involved in something like that, sports is such a big part in your life that, you know, I don't think there's too many other options for you really, you know, if everything else is going okay. So, you know, for me, that was always my attitude every year, was that as long as I thought I was able to go back and contribute something, you know, why not? I'd be long enough sitting at home as a supporter watching it, so might as well try and make the most of while we're there.
Keith, I've always felt that losses or disappointments can lead to forging incredible friendships, unbelievable bonds, and now cutting that, or is it right to say cutting it, but stepping away from it, how are we going to manage that, or have you thought about that?
I don't know, it'll be the difficult part, I suppose. Even I know even when Andy retired there a couple of years ago, he made the point the hardest part was leaving the WhatsApp group, and you know, you're kind of laughing at him going, sure, look, he still has the lad's number on his phone, he can text him whenever he wants, but you know, in a way it is, because it's like I said, you do build up bonds with lads. You're spending 3-4 nights a week with them in training for a couple hours, and then all of a sudden there's very limited contact, and that's just the way life is. I mean, some lads you will stay very close to, some lads will kind of drift away, and you might talk to them maybe once a year, you know, and that's just the way it is. And like I said, we would have seen that the last few years when different lads would have left the panel or retired as well. So, you know, it's not ideal, but I suppose you just have to try and make that effort then, just to stay in contact with them. But it is difficult, but it's not something I kind of try to dwell on too much. It's kind of, it's part and parcel, but you just try and move on, I suppose.
And just in terms of the role that you became quite well known for, and a lot of people were really enjoying reliving your battles with James O'Donoghue on social media this week, how did you perfect the art of man-marking?
I don't know if I ever perfected it. Some people would tell you I wasn't a cornerback, but I don't know. I suppose I was lucky kind of when I started out my career. I suppose, you know, probably had that bit of extra speed that kind of got me out of a lot of trouble. And I'm sure like anybody playing any sport, they'll tell you once you're kind of there for a few years, or the older you get, you kind of maybe learn to read the game a bit more, understand it a bit more, and that can kind of get you out of a bit of trouble as well. So and like obviously the game then evolved as well in the last few years. I mean, when I started off first, there was no such thing as a sweep or a blanket defences, so you just had to, you know, rely on your one-on-one batting skills. But you know, as the time moved on, there was sweepers in place, and it was more nearly trying to just cut off space and that type of thing. So yeah, it's evolving the whole time, and it'll evolve again. But you know, for me, it was just kind of learning how to read the game was the biggest advantage I felt over the last few years.
Keith, when I was introducing you at the top of the segment, and I said you were stepping away from Mayo GAA, what I should have said was you were stepping away from Mayo football, because I'm not sure. Are you stepping away from hurling?
No, not that I know of yet, anyways.
Very good.
No, I spoke to Derek Welch there, that the hurling manager, at the beginning of the week as well. And yeah, look, I said to him, as long as I was able to give it a go, I'd go back in with them. I suppose it's... it's always been kind of a passion of mine to play hurling as well. So, yeah, definitely try and give it a go anyways, and hopefully the body will hold up and we can give that a rattle for a while.
It's mad, really, because, you know, when you think about it, like, so many people will have never seen you play hurling as well, which is quite a frustrating thing, that, you know, there's only a certain amount of counties that do get all the recognition and the interest, but there's a whole lot of other people around the country who play hurling. It's just at a different level.
Yeah, exactly, and, you know, like I would have seen it down through the years, these guys as well, they spend as much time training in the gym as well as I in the leading counties. And like I said, they probably just don't get the recognition or the airtime or whatever that they deserve for it. But look, at the end of the day, that's what sport is for. If lads enjoy doing it, if lads love doing it, you know, that's what they're there for, I suppose. You know, you're playing hurling with Mayo, you're not there for the attention or the media attention or anything like that. You're just there for the pure love of the game.
Right, well, I for one will be looking forward to seeing you playing in some sort of championship anyway. Hopefully we'll get something back soon. But Keith Higgins, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for all those entertaining days over the last 16 seasons. We wish you the best of luck.
Cheers, guys. Thanks very much.
2FM with Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back, Donegal. I don't think I need to ask you whether or not you use Jenny's shampoo and conditioner.
Just moisturisers. Tinted moisturisers, if there's one of those around the place. Might take a little bit of it.
This is probably a good time to bring in our next guest, Conan Byrne. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I don't think I could do with some more hair to use with that moisturiser now, more so than anything else.
Right, let's move on, because this could end up taking up the rest of the show with Donegal anyway, for sure. So, Conan, look, I think it is just an absolute roller coaster at the moment, because everything that you are not expecting to happen seems to happen. And last night was one of those nights, seeing Manchester United defeated 2-1 by bottom of the table Sheffield United at Old Trafford was a bit of a shock. But I think what was most shocking for me anyway was that they were just playing without any energy, without any direction. And that's before I even mentioned the word consistency that we've been associating with them for such a long time.
Yeah, but I think they've been getting their consistency back over the last number of months, and few would have predicted this result, Marie, of course. And I just thought Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's decision to drop Luke, well, not drop Luke Shaw, but to rest Luke Shaw wasn't a great judgment, because Luke Shaw, in my opinion, has been Manchester United's best player. Going forward, tracking back, defensively, he's been very, very solid. And the winning goal came down the left-hand side. Obviously, it was terrible defending. But yeah, I thought Luke Shaw's decision to keep him on the bench was poor. And the reliance on Bruno Fernandes, I think, is a bit too much as well. At the moment, he cannot afford to have an off game, because if he does, Manchester United will struggle. He has that ability of dominating games and dictating games. And in the last couple of weeks, I've just seen a drop in his performances a little bit, albeit he scored a magnificent strike against Liverpool in the FA Cup on Sunday to win the game. But I think he needs to do a little bit more. So I just hope that his form isn't going to drop. But they've been grinding out results, Manchester United. Like, rarely do they win by two or more goals, and they seem to be better playing against counter attack when teams come up against them. So it was a disappointing result. A hugely disappointing result for them, considering the Manchester City now have a game in hand over them.
Just Conan, the kind of banana skin, everyone saw it kind of coming, really, didn't it? You know, I don't think that lies with a coach like Ollie, a manager like Ollie. That's with the players, isn't it? When you know you're playing, unfortunately, the worst team in the league, you need to mentally pitch up.
Absolutely, Donica, yeah, it is. That's definitely what I take from it. It was a mental defeat, I suppose, if one for a better word. Manchester United, I think everybody's thought that they were going to go out and win the game. They really should have. Even when they got back to 1-0 and then Harry Maguire scored that header, you just sensed that it was going to be another comeback performance from Manchester United. But I think complacency came in again on the team, and they didn't dominate from there forward. They didn't create many chances, and Sheffield United were full credit for their victory.
They looked like a real team, to be fair, Sheffield. Do you think they could have enough now to get out of the dogfight at the bottom, 10 points off it?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they've just left themselves a lot to do. As you say, they've got some fantastic players. I think Oliver Bourke over the last number of weeks has been tremendous. He's a really, really good player. But I just think that 10-point gap is a little bit too much, especially if you see the teams above them, like West Brom, obviously are struggling for form. But Scott Parker's Fulham, he got a great point yesterday in Brighton. And even though they're not winning a lot of games, Fulham are picking up great results, drawing with Southampton, drawing with Liverpool. I think Fulham will have a better chance of escaping. Obviously, they're better points tally and all. But I think Sheffield United are going to be going down, unfortunately.
So the big story of the night was, of course, the arrival of Thomas Tuchel, and the game plan, really, I think, was quite interesting. We know that he's really obsessed with a possession game. We saw Chelsea make 879 passes, the most that they've made in a single Premier League game since 2018. So it's clear that he has a vision and that he seems to be able to communicate it as well.
Yes, and he communicated that very, very quickly. He got a really raw deal at PSG, I feel. He won the domestic treble and last season got to the Champions League final. And was obviously defeated by Bayern Munich. But I'd be very interested to see the German connection, how it's going to work, because obviously they had the Kai Havertz and Timo Werner have really, really struggled for form and confidence since arriving. Even Anthony Rudiger at the back, they haven't been very, they haven't kept many clean sheets all season. So it'll be interesting to see how the German lads do with Tuchel in the dugout. But yes, already he's only in the job a couple of days, and to see that stat of 879 passes completed in one game just shows that, as you say, his communication and getting that through to the players is key.
Yeah, and hopefully he'll be able to improve, because they'll have him out the door in no time with the track record they have in Chelsea. But it's all about characters, and he's a bit animated, he's spiky, he'll be good for the game there, won't he?
I think he'd be great. I'm really fascinated with his coaching style. He's not a manager that had a very successful career. Injury caused him to retire very, very early on, and he just went into coaching at a young age, and he's just picked up a lot from his mentors throughout. He's took bits from everybody, and he has his own unique style now. And it's proved very, very fruitful at Borussia Dortmund and PSG. And Chelsea will be looking for the same, especially Abramovich. I'm thinking that he's going to try and get into the top four. Bit of an ask, considering that Liverpool and Spurs are outside the top four at the moment. So there's a lot of teams eyeing for that Champions League spots. But not out of their reach, especially with Tuchel in charge.
Well, speaking of Spurs and Liverpool, they are in action at 8 o'clock. And Guy Swindles is at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for us.
2 months ago, when these two were 1 and 2 in the table and flying, it looked as if the Premier League could turn into a two-horse race. It still might, but it's getting tougher to see if we'll actually involve these two teams, who meet tonight in 5th and 6th, and trying to overtake West Ham. Injuries certainly haven't been kind to Liverpool, particularly in defence, but they do have Jordan Henderson back, or hope to, tonight as they try and reverse a run of no wins in 5 in the league. As for Spurs, they're in better shape, unbeaten in 8 in all competitions, though 4 of those have been cup games. Had the usual Mourinho moans about Jurgen Klopp, this is set up really nicely. Someone loses this one, Champions League qualification becomes an issue, let alone the title. Spurs-Liverpool at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Conan, it is set up very nicely, I have to say. It's one I think that everyone's going to be sitting in now, not really a huge amount to do tonight. Massive game, two teams that have a lot to play for.
Oh, it's going to be huge, isn't it? Really, really looking forward to it. And Manchester City are just going to be, and Manchester City, Manchester United fans are going to be looking on with, they're going to be looking at this and thinking that if it's a draw between these two games, it widens the gap a little bit more if they continue to win games, especially with Man City's game in hand. Because if a defeat for Liverpool tonight would leave them 7 points behind Manchester City, and with Manchester City having a game in hand, so they could go 10 points clear. I worry, Marie, for Liverpool defensively. I think Trent Alexander-Arnold, I think he's taking away his distribution, which has been terrible. Like he's been picked on by opposing managers defensively, and I think Son up against him tonight, I think he's in for a tough task. Son and Kane, the combination between them have been absolutely magnificent, and they've been setting up each other's chances, goals. And Kane against any of Liverpool centre backs at the moment is going to be a tough ask. Well, whether it's going to be Fabinho, Jordan Henderson, or even some of the young lads like Reece Williams. So it's going to be an interesting game, because at the other end, Spurs aren't that comfortable themselves at the back. So it's interesting to see how Mourinho sets that up. Does he go for it, which Manchester United should have done at Anfield a couple of weeks ago, where they could have came away with 3 points? Or does he hold off like Mourinho style and try and get an early goal and sit back on their laurels? So it'll be a very interesting game. Tactically, it's going to be very, very astute, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Conan, you're always really good at calling them, so call this one for us.
I actually think Spurs have a very, very good chance of winning this evening.
I'm just going to cut you off right now.
I know, Marie, I'm a Liverpool fan as well, so I'm not too, I'm a bit disappointed with my prediction, but I just feel that the form of Liverpool's defensive line hasn't been great, and with Mourinho, I just think that if they get that early goal, I think they'll shut up shop. And I think Liverpool have struggled to break down teams over the last number of weeks. Their top three haven't been firing on all cylinders. So
they've been creating chances, though. They've been getting into the right positions.
Not scoring, no, Marie, that's the thing. It's all about putting the
goals. What about these expected goals people love talking about? I think that's a conversation for another day.
Let's hope you're wrong, Conan. Let's hope you're wrong for Marie's form tomorrow. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Conan.
Okay, time to cross the Atlantic. We're delighted to be joined by our teammate, Jeff Shepherd. Shep, how are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you all today?
We're good, we're good. Shep, we're over a week away from the greatest show on earth. No, not Ireland's fittest family, the Super Bowl.
You used that joke last year. You're going to have to get a new one.
he gets a 1 year, you know, limit. So I mean, it's he has to, you know, work it in whenever he can.
Yeah,
I mean, look, you know, the Chiefs and the Buccaneers are going to play. I was half right on my predictions last week. You know, I mean, the Chiefs, I think, you know, kind of handled business and did what they needed to do against Buffalo. You know, just played a really good game. Again, their offense is just so tough. And look, I mean, you know, Tom Brady, you know, goes into Green Bay and really played a great first half and was, you know, so-so, if not maybe not great in the second half, but it was enough to get his team over. And, you know, I mean, there are just so many storylines here. You know, highlights.
I'm going to pull you up on that one because I saw a great tweet about that. And it was like the first half, everyone was like, oh my God, I can't believe he's 43. And then the second half was like, well, he is 43.
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean, look, that play, if you didn't see the play just before the end of the second quarter, he hit Scotty Miller in the end zone on a bomb on fourth down and three. I mean, that really was the dagger. I mean, Green Bay never really recovered from that, but in the second half they picked him off three times on some ill-advised throws on some of them too, so it was kind of a, you know, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type situation there for Brady. I thought they played better than they were going to play without Antonio Brown, and Green Bay's offense really struggled with the very formidable defensive front for the Buccaneers. And if they can get any kind of pressure like that on Patrick Mahomes, you know, they're going to cause problems. But it's just Travis Kelce is just such an unbelievable weapon that the Chiefs have in their arsenal to kind of just, I mean, you know, the over-under for him to have catches, I think, was like 7 for the game. He had 7 and with like 2 minutes to go in the second quarter. He had 13 for the game. I mean, he was just phenomenal. But so now, you know, you've got Brady and, you know, going for Super Bowl number 7, playing in his 10th Super Bowl, which is just unbelievable. And the Bucs become the first team in NFL history to host a Super Bowl in their home stadium. Most years you're like, oh my God, what an unbelievable home field advantage. And it will be a home field advantage this year, but obviously because of the pandemic, you know, you're not going to have as many fans in the stands. And the Chiefs were just there last year in the Super Bowl, and they obviously won it, and so they've got experience. So, I mean, this really feels like it's got the makings of a really good, potentially memorable Super Bowl.
Chip, whatever about the teams, the quarterbacks is box office stuff, isn't it? What's the reaction being at home?
Oh, I mean, I think, you know, people, if you liked Tom Brady before, you know, you're excited. If you hated him before, you hate him even more now. You know, that he's done it again, and here he is back in the Super Bowl. And, you know, he's got his Instagram video with him and Gronk. And it just depends on where you fall on the Tom Brady spectrum. I mean, regardless of what it is, I mean, the guy has just been the best quarterback, you know, in NFL history, win or lose. I mean, there aren't a lot of quarterbacks. There's probably no quarterback that's ever lost 4 Super Bowls. So even if he loses, he's going to make history. But, I mean, yeah, 7 would just be an all-timer. And here's the thing, though. Just about the only guy who could potentially, you know, that we know of right now, have a chance to come anywhere close to equaling this record is Mahomes. And he would have to win this year to get 2 in his first 4 years, which is basically the pace that Brady was on.
Shep, we will get into it in a lot more detail next week when we do a full-on preview. But just on a very positive note, there's obviously going to be fans there, and a lot of the tickets are going as well to some of the frontline workers, which is just brilliant to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think the NFL's making an effort to make sure that, you know, doctors, nurses, EMTs, you know, people that have been in long-term care facilities, again, those frontline workers, those frontline medical workers, I mean, if they could... who can you think of more on the earth that needs maybe just a 4-hour break from reality, you know, to just kind of go back and just enjoy a little bit of a football game for a while? So I'm sure we're going to see a lot of stories over the next week or two of the next week, you know, of these folks getting tickets.
Shep, there is an awful lot going on, but in baseball, there's no Hall of Famer this year.
Yeah, real quickly, guys. So no one was voted in this year into the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame. The three big candidates that are kind of getting all the headlines are Barry Bonds, you know, the great slugger for the San Francisco Giants and the Pittsburgh Pirates, Roger Clemens, the great pitcher for the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Blue Jays, and Curt Schilling, who had his best years with the Boston Red Sox. Clemens and Bonds are linked to all of the steroids, and they really have not voted any of the players from the steroid era, basically the early to mid 90s through, you know, 2000 and, you know, 10-ish ballpark, into the Hall of Fame yet. And those players are now eligible, and they're coming up every year, and they're not getting in. So it's going to be interesting to see. And Curt Schilling, quite honestly, it really just looks like he was kept out because of his political views. And he has asked to not be involved in the voting anymore because he said it's just not worth it. So there's a lot of discussion going on this side of the pond about the voting. And the big thing is all of these major league players linked to steroids. Alex Rodriguez is eligible next year. You know, he's got over 600 home runs. Is he going to be eligible? So, or is he going to get voted in? It is going to be interesting to see how they handle this moving forward.
Absolutely. Shep, as always, thanks so much. We'll catch up with you next week to preview the Super Bowl. Thanks a million. We'll chat to you soon. Okay, that's it from us. A massive thank you to Jarlett and Ronan. The brilliant Carol Mullins up next. We're back tomorrow at 6. Live.